Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the last day of TechEd and today's session on deploying SQL Server 2014 with cluster shared volumes. My name is Subhashish Bhattacharya, and I'm a program manager in the Windows Server failover clustering team. In some ways, today feels like the end of a journey. We started dreaming up cluster shared volumes, or CSV, around about 2008. At that point, the failover cluster team was part of the SQL division. And if you're thinking about a new file system and you're going to the SQL management, hey, we want to come up with a new file system. Any guesses for what their first question would be? They'd obviously want to know how would CSV benefit the SQL workload. So from the initial design of CSV, we had to make sure that we had taken into consideration what the requirements of SQL Server will be. But as time passed on, ironically, the first workload that we released CSV with was Hyper-V in Windows Server 2008 R2. Then we revised CSV with CSV 2.0, and we made it more general purpose. So we had the file server workload, and we pretty much had everything but SQL Server. Then finally, with SQL Server 2014, we now support SQL Server. The good thing with this delay is that now CSV is kind of a mature file system. You can think of it as a battle-tested file system. It's been deployed in hoster sites, production, scale. We've had some pain points, but they are, for the most part, resolved. And you can sort of be relieved when you are deploying CSV. It's not a new file system that you'd probably have to work through issues and bugs. So I'm excited today to talk about how you can benefit by deploying SQL on CSV. So to set some expectations up front, this is a 300-level session. So I expect that all of you here have a reasonable grasp of basic failover clustering concepts. I also expect that you all have probably deployed SQL Server with traditional cluster storage, because I'm not going to walk through the recommendations of typical SQL Server deployment. I'm going to focus more on the nuances with cluster shared volumes. That said, for most of my slides, or at least a lot of the slides, I have references to TechNet articles, blog articles, and some previous TechEd talks. So if from all these references, you could probably end up with around about 6 to 7 hours of study if you're motivated. Our agenda for today, I'm going to first talk about what CSV is, so that we are on the same page. Next, I'd like to discuss how you can benefit from deploying SQL on CSV. So what is the value proposition for you? I'd like to talk about some deployment considerations that you might want to take into account before you go into production. And finally, I'll quickly walk through the steps that you'd have to walk through when you are deploying SQL with CSV. For the most part, the deployment experience would be identical to deploying SQL with traditional cluster storage. There are around about three steps that you'd experience changes with CSV. But for the rest of it, it's what you know from all your previous deployments. Out of curiosity, how many of y'all in this room are familiar with CSV? Okay, a majority of you all. Any CSV deployments with SQL or SQL deployments with CSV? Okay, one hand there. So hopefully in about a year, all of you all would be deploying SQL with CSV. Most of you are familiar with CSV, but I'd still walk through the concepts of CSV so that we are all on the same page and there are no there's no scope for confusion. So what is CSV? You can think of it as a layer of abstraction on NTFS. It's our clustered file system for Windows Server. So what it entails, unlike NTFS, with NTFS, you have a single node that's able to read and write to the shared storage. But with CSV, all nodes in the cluster have shared access to the shared storage. That means that now with when you're failing over the SQL workload, you no longer need to unmount and mount the storage. So that makes your workload more available, and it decreases your failover time. All goodness, right? For any clustered file system, you need a mechanism to orchestrate metadata. Some clustered file systems do this orchestration on the storage side. But what ends up happening when you're orchestrating metadata on the storage side is that you can run into some nasty I/O contention and locking issues. So what we decided to do is to orchestrate the metadata on the server side. So we designate one node and we call that node the coordinator node. That's the node on which the NTFS volume is mounted. And any other metadata operations from the other cluster nodes are orchestrated or sent over the network using SMB 3.0. So that gives you the scope for parallelizing these metadata updates, because you can spread your CSV volumes across your cluster nodes. So if you have one SQL instance which is on CSV 1, you could have the coordinator node on node 1. So for the next SQL instance, you could have the coordinator node on node 3. So you do not have a bottleneck between the metadata updates for the two instances or the two cluster shared volumes. So let's walk through the complete architecture. So for typical data updates, this is kind of what it looks like, the green lines. So we mount a CSV proxy file system on all nodes of the cluster. Any reads and writes to your database are sent directly to the shared storage. We do not need to orchestrate this traffic through the coordinator node. So we aren't even hitting the NTFS stack in this case. But what happens if you do not have connectivity to your storage? Perhaps you have a storage failure, or maybe you've taken a node down for maintenance and you do not have connectivity to the storage. Or perhaps you have a large cluster and it's very expensive for you to have shared connectivity to the storage from all nodes of the cluster. In that case, what CSV would do is that it would redirect traffic on the block level. So it would traverse the CSV proxy file system stack on the cluster node, and then it would redirect traffic over the network using SMB 3.0 to a CSV filter on the coordinator node, and it would send the traffic directly to the disk. The point to note is that we would not traverse the NTFS stack. So you are not paying a penalty of traversing two file system stacks. Then for metadata updates, this is going to be redirected or sent over the network at the file system level. So the metadata requests from SQL Server is going to hit the CSV proxy file system stack. We are going to send it over SMB 3.0 over the network to the coordinator node, and then through the NTFS stack, we are going to send it to the storage. That's because CSV does not have or cannot maintain consistency if it sends these metadata updates directly to the storage. Sometimes customers get kind of nervous when you are sending traffic over the network. Is that going to be a bottleneck? How often are these metadata updates going to happen? The good news and the key takeaway for SQL Server is that these aren't going to happen very often. Metadata updates for SQL Server are rare occurrences. So it's going to happen when you create and close your database, which I'm guessing is around about once every 6 months. The initial provisioning of your database, the guidance from the SQL Server team is to over-provision, I gather. And also, you incur metadata penalties, or not penalties, operations, when you extend your database. But again, the guidance from the SQL Server team is to not turn on auto-log incrementation. So you're unlikely to hit metadata update requirements for this. And the final operation where you can require metadata updates is for backups. Not for the whole backup operation, just when you create a snapshot. For that initial snapshot creation, CSV is going to route traffic at the file level. So putting this all together, this is what your IO path would look like. So I want to throw in some terminologies which you might encounter when you're working with CSV. So you have direct IO, where you're able to send your SQL traffic directly to the shared storage. Then you have block redirected IO, where you do not have connectivity to the storage. And finally, you have file system redirected IO, when you have metadata updates, and you are routing your traffic through the NTFS file system on the coordinator node. So some of you might have picked up a couple of concerns. So what if the node where the coordinator or the coordinator node goes down? What happens then? The good news is that the way CSV works is it virtualizes the connection from SQL Server to your file handles. So when it detects that the node is down or its storage connectivity is lost, it's going to hold on to the IO. Then the cluster service is going to elect a new coordinator node, and it's going to fail over the NTFS stack. And after that is completed, CSV is going to flush the IO. This means that your SQL Server application is going to notice a slight lag, but it's not going to go down. A second possible concern might be here we are redirecting traffic over the network for a couple of instances. So what happens if the network connection that's being used currently goes down. So CSP has multiple layers of redundancy for networking. So by default, it uses SMB multi-channel. And the way SMB multi-channel works is it would first try to use the most optimal connection. So if it's your 10 gig networks with RDMA enabled, it would use multiple of them. And then it'll go down the stack to the least, to the network of least efficiency. And for us, if SMB multi-channel failed, we are going to fail over to the mechanism used in, say, 2008 R2. That is using our cluster NTFS networking stack. So essentially what this is this is fault-tolerant TCP connections which the cluster service has investigated and found out. So it has charted out multiple network paths. And if one of them fails, it can fail over to the next one. So CSP has multiple failbacks in case it starts losing network connectivities. So that's pretty much the gist of the basics of CSP. And that's kind of all, for the most part, that you're going to encounter. It is a complex file system under the covers, but most of the complexity is abstracted from you. So to add storage to CSP, it's pretty straightforward. You go to your friendly failover cluster manager, you select the disk tabs, you go to your available storage, just right-click on it, and add to cluster shared volumes, and that's it. You've added storage to CSP. Or you can use PowerShell, add cluster shared volumes, specify the available storage, and you've added storage to CSP. So once you've added your storage to CSV, you have all your storage under a consistent namespace. So it's all going to be under C colon cluster storage volume 1 to X. And there's no limitations for the number of volumes that you can add to cluster shared volumes. For your SQL instances, you might prefer to rename these volumes, because hey, volume 1 volume or volume 20 may not make as much sense as, say, your SQL instance for production or any other application. But the point to note is that you should rename these before you provision your SQL Server or before you deploy SQL Server. You do not want to deploy SQL Server and then rename your cluster shared volumes. We've talked about multiple modes of sending traffic or multiple modes for CSV. There might be instances during your deployment where you want to find out what exactly is going on for your CSV. And you can also have instances where you are in direct IO mode on one node on the cluster, you might be on block redirected mode on another node, and your CSP state might vary based on your cluster node or what's going on there. So we have a commandlet called get cluster shared volume state, which would give you the per node status of every CSV on every node in the cluster. And in case it's in redirected mode, it's going to tell you exactly why it's in redirected mode. I mean, that might be a good thing, or you might need to take further maintenance actions.
When can we see this black redirected information?
The block redirected information?
Is that in event logs?
Yeah, I mean, the question was, where can we see the block redirected information? So when we send traffic using block redirected or redirected in general, we are going to log an event, but and we have performance counters for a file system redirected and block redirected, in case you're curious about exactly how much traffic is being sent. And you might want to provision your network connections to make sure that your CSV or your deployment is optimally configured. But if you just want to know if your CSV is in block redirected mode, you use this commandlet. So let's have a quick demo of how to configure CSV and what this looks like. So I have a bunch of available storage. So let me first rename this so that I remember it later on. So let me call this DB. And let's see which one. Okay. Let's rename this one as well. So now I want to add both of these to cluster shared volumes. So I just select them, right click, and add to cluster shared volumes. That's pretty much it. And you've configured cluster shared volumes for your cluster. So when you go in and look at the properties, this would show up as CSVFS. So your typical, you're accustomed to traditional storage where you're using NTFS. If you look into your mount point for CSV, this is going to be exposed as volume one, volume two. You can rename it again for your convenience. Say, and let's say, SQL. And these are the parts that we are going to provide when we are deploying SQL Server. Finally, let's go to Disk Manager and see how this is exposed. So your file system type is going to be exposed as CSVFS as well. So any tools or applications or your antivirus software is going to want to be CSVFS aware. And at this point, most of the backup software and antivirus from Symantec and all the major players are interoperable with CSVFS as well. Sure. You mean between 512 and 4? The question is there a default block size or can you choose the block size? So by default, we go with, I think, in general, you can choose the block size, but we do go with a default block size. And off the top of the bat, I'm not very sure of the block size, so I don't want to give you a wrong answer. Absolutely. The question is, does this have to be formatted before you use it? And the answer is yes. Right. Yep. I mean, we do not have a best practice that we recommend. It's for you to determine what's most optimal for you. A question in the back. Right, it's formatted NTFS because, I mean, it's basically a layer of abstraction. Right. Any other questions? Question back. The question is, can you change the root? So no, it's always under C colon cluster storage. And you can provision the mount point after that point, but CSV is always stored under the mount point C colon cluster storage. Yeah, you can put in, like once you've gotten into a certain cluster, a CSV, you can nest folders in there. So you can treat it as any traditional folder structure. Right, so you could map a LAN to these structures. So the question is, can you use REFS? So CSV does support REFS, but SQL Server does not support REFS on, at least on CSV. I don't know if it's supported on traditional storage. I believe the answer is no. Any other questions? Okay, let's walk through what I consider the value of deploying SQL Server with CSV. So let's briefly consider where we are today with, or what the scenario is with traditional clustered storage. You want your LANs for your database or your logs to fail over with your SQL instance. So you're sort of mapping an instance to a LAN or an instance to a couple of LANs. So at some point, this becomes a scalability issue because there are 26 alphabets. One is taken up for your system drive. You might sacrifice your CD-ROM and or whatever, and you end up having 24 drive letters which you can use for a cluster. So that limits you to around about 24 instances in a single cluster. And if you are sort of spreading out your database and log over different physical drives as is recommended, you're probably down to around about 12. Your max cluster size can be 64 nodes in 2012 R2, but you really cannot leverage, SQL clusters today end up being pretty small in size, typically 2 nodes. You really can't expand beyond that because you cannot scale because of this limitation per se. I mean, there might be other issues as well, but this is definitely one issue. Yeah, you could use mount points, but that does increase the complexity versus using, in terms of manageability as well. And if you do have separate LANs, which you have to manage separately, your capacity planning kind of gets complex because you have leftover space at times, or you're over-provisioning or under-provisioning. And then you have to manage these separate LANs across the nodes of a cluster. So let's see what happens with CSV. With CSV, you're able to consolidate these different LANs for your log and database. So you now have a simplified management experience. You can log on to any node in the cluster, and your cluster shared volume is visible and accessible from all nodes of your cluster. You're able to consolidate the storage that you're allocating, and you're no longer limited to 24 or 25 drive letters, or in other cases, having to deal with the issues of mount points or any other complexity with that. A question in the back. Right. Okay. That's correct. I mean, CSV does not, like the question was that the number of clustered instances was limited to 25, standalone was to 50. So CSV does not have any limitations. So you are no longer limited to 25 clustered instances. Yeah, I mean, if there's a limitation from the SQL end, that, I mean, you're still limited by that, but you would not have any limitations from the clustering side of things. Availability is probably one of the most important considerations for y'all. And I'm guessing all of y'all want to be shooting for maybe 5.9s. So now with CSV, you do not need to unmount and mount your storage. Databases are moved without drive letter changes. That means your SQL Server is more available during, because the failover is much faster. CSV also allows you to be resilient to some storage failures underneath. I'll explain why. And the third value prop is that CSV is integrated with CheckDisks. We had some improvements in CheckDisks in 2012, and CSV takes it the next step further so that you can have a zero downtime repair with CheckDisk. So why is CSV resilient to storage failures? So with a traditional SQL deployment, you have lost your storage connectivity. Your options are to either repair this connectivity or fail over your SQL instance to another node in the cluster. So your SQL application is not available. But with CSV, we detect that the storage is no longer available, and we are able to redirect traffic over the block level to the coordinator node. So your application is running uninterrupted. There might be a slight interruption in the application, but there will be no downtime. Before 2012, one of the biggest pain points for provisioning large storage was the amount of time CheckDisk took to run. If you had something like a 2 terabyte SAN, it could take hours and maybe even a couple of days to run. But with 2012, for CheckDisk, your scan and repair operations were separated. And scan was made an online operation. So you incurred no downtime. But for a traditional check disk, you'd still have to incur some downtime when you were repairing corruptions in your storage. That time was, so in a gist, check disk time was decreased from hours to more like seconds. But CSV takes it to the next level. We integrate with check disk so that we periodically check for corruptions. And if we find corruptions, we briefly pend IO and we repair the corruptions. So that way your application can stay online. We are careful to ensure that we do not interrupt traffic for too long. So if any of, I walk through the exact flow that we take in one of the references below. So if you're curious, you can look into it. But that essentially gives you a zero downtime solution for running CheckDisk with SQL Server. A couple of potential considerations or value props with CSV: performance and security. So CSV has a block level cache. So we cache I/O, unbuffered I/O, and that has given significant value for the file server and the Hyper-V workloads. We've seen kind of like 20-fold perf improvements. That's primarily because Windows does not, the Windows Cache Manager does not cache unbuffered I/O. But in the case of SQL Server, the value prop isn't as clear cut because SQL Server on its own does cache unbuffered I/O. So, and at this point, we do not have any perf studies which shows which cache is more efficient, or do you want to have both caches together. So there is a potential for performance improvement, but I cannot claim today that the CSV cache gives you an enormous value for SQL Server. So that's something that needs to be experimented. You can try it out, and I'm sure internally at Microsoft, we'll be running tests to determine what the value prop is there. Secondly, in terms of security, CSV is integrated with BitLocker. So it gives you a second option for securing your storage in sort of outside your secure data center, maybe in branch offices. In some cases, this is pretty useful for meeting compliance requirements without too much of hassles or pain points. But again, I'm not going to emphasize BitLocker with CSV as a huge value prop again, because SQL Server has its own mechanisms as well. So it's again a trade-off as to which mechanism is more suitable for your operations. For some older deployments, in the last couple of years, I haven't heard of too many polyserve deployments, but in case that's an issue with you, CSV does meet a lot of the polyserve, or at least looking at it, it seems to meet most of the polyserve quick specs, as they call it. So it's another thing to consider if you are using polyserve. Any questions at this point? Question here. So question is, does it work? So the question is, does it work in a virtualized environment with shared VHDX? Absolutely, and that's one of the scenarios we recommend shared VHDX to be used. So we have a session from last year where we walked through the shared VHDX. It's a session dedicated to shared VHDX, so I'd refer you to that as to configuring shared VHDX, and once you've configured it, you can pretty much follow what we talk about in today's session to configure SQL Server using shared VHDX, but it's absolutely supported. Question in the back. So the question is, can you I'll rephrase the question. Can you interop with third-party or external storage such as Fusion I/O or something of that sort? So CSV does not directly provide a mechanism for interoping with the cache, but I am aware of third-party vendors who have interoped with the CSV cache to provide an alternative mechanism for allocating memory for your RAM. But I would not be able to speak to it, but the people at Fusion I/O or other third-party vendors might be able to talk to it. I know we have been working with them, but I'm not aware of the exact offerings from them. Any other questions? So I'd like to quickly walk through some deployment configurations. Which configurations, which of your current SQL deployments would be a best fit for using CSV, and which aren't recommended by the SQL team? and what other considerations for perhaps your storage or networking you need to think about when you are deploying with cluster shared volumes. So first scenario where CSV is a good fit is with aggregated storage configuration. So here, you can also refer to this as local CSV. So you have your storage and your compute in the same cluster. So this is pretty much what I demoed right here. And this is supported from SQL Server 2014. You can use either Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2. Both of them are supported. And the next failover cluster instance scenario is where you have disaggregated storage or the scale-out file server scenario. So the huge value prop here is that by separating your storage cluster and your compute cluster, so the cluster where you're running your failover cluster, your SQL Server workload, you're able to invest in both these clusters separately. So you can invest in all the latest and greatest scale-out file server features such as SMB Direct or RDMA on a separate cluster, and you can leverage this cluster over multiple multiple compute clusters. So you are able to scale both these clusters independently. And we typically had about three or four sessions in most of these conferences on scale-out file server. So in a minute or two, I'd definitely not be able to do justice to it. But I'd point you to a presentation by Jose Barreto in last year's TechEd, where he discusses the scale-out file server scenario on Hyper-V. And you can draw a lot of parallels on the SQL scenario with the Hyper-V scenario. And the good news here is that, interestingly, the scale-out file server scenario with FCI was supported with SQL Server 2012. So if you're deploying with aggregated storage model, you do not need SQL 2014 to use CSV or scale-out file server, which underneath uses CSV. So summarizing that, our recommendation would be if you are deploying a failover cluster instance, you consider deploying with cluster shared volumes, either in the aggregated or the disaggregated models. And for others, you use your traditional cluster disk model, and you have a lot of flexibility pretty much to use any supported Windows Server or SQL Server releases. But there are some nuances, perhaps, that you might be thinking about. What if you have direct attached storage and you are using a third-party replication solution? For example, you might be using a software replication solution from SteelEye or DoubleTake. Software replication is not supported by CSV. So that's an asterisk. But hardware replication is supported. So if you're using replication solutions from NetApp or HP or EMC, these are supported with CSV. So you can go ahead and deploy your failover cluster instances for these scenarios. The other potential question is, what about availability groups? Why can't you use CSV for these? This boils down to a requirement from the SQL end, wherein across your DR and your primary site, you need to have unique SQL database names across the sites. And with CSV, the names would be identical. This is a potential area for future support, but at this point, it is not supported. Currently, the guidance from the SQL Server team is that if your SQL instance is performance sensitive, to allocate your log in your database on storage carved out of different physical disks. This requirement carries over for CSV as well. So I can restate this requirement as one, as that you should deploy your SQL Server database and log on cluster shared volumes carved out of different physical disks. Some network considerations which you might have already gathered from our discussion thus far. So you know we might leverage the network using SMB 3.0 for metadata updates and for failure or unplanned storage connectivity scenarios. So what does this mean for you? It essentially means that you want to provision appropriate network bandwidth between your coordinator node and the nodes in your cluster. So perhaps fire up your performance counters for file system redirected mode and block redirected mode and see what kind of network traffic your workload is generating and provision your network appropriately. You might also consider distributing the CSVs across your cluster. By default, in 2012 R2, we'll distribute the CSVs across the cluster. But we do not know your deployment model. So we do not know the optimal distribution. We'll just ensure that if you have 10 CSVs and 5 nodes in your cluster, we'll spread out 2 CSVs across the nodes in the cluster. So by spreading out CSVs, I mean the CSV owners. So you'd probably want to adjust these automatic distribution to sort of mesh with an optimal configuration for your deployment. And the last guidance is that you should disable iSCSI networks for your cluster use. Essentially, you do not want them to be used for CSV traffic. So now let's think about a step-by-step deployment what does it take to go in and deploy SQL Server with CSV? For the most part, as I mentioned, it's pretty identical to what you're already used to today. So your first step would be provisioning your shared storage, as you already do today. You'd add your CSV, or at least add your storage to your CSV. Make sure you planned out what CSVs you need to use for your SQL deployment, where you're going to be storing your log database files. Are they different, or are you going to leverage the same CSV? You go ahead as in today, and you install SQL 2014 on your first node. All the steps here are going to be identical, or at least you should proceed in an identical manner until you get to the point where you're configuring your database engine. And there's a specific tab there where you select your data directories. That's the point of difference. Here, instead of pointing to your traditional clustered storage, you're going to point to your CSV paths that you have provisioned in the previous steps. And once you're done with that, you go ahead and deploy your failover cluster instance on node 1. And then after that, subsequently, you go ahead and add your remaining nodes in your cluster to the SQL FCI. I'm going to demonstrate these steps right now, but I've also captured all these steps in a blog, and the links are there, so you can refer to these when you are deploying these in your once you're out of here. So we already have our 2 cluster shared volumes. I'm going to start a new failover cluster instance deployment. So we start off with entering our product here. I use an evaluation version. I obviously accept the license terms, and I like to improve customer feedback, so I turn that on. But I'm sure most of you will uncheck that, but that's okay. We understand. We want Microsoft to check for updates and Microsoft update to do whatever it wants, so we check that as well. So it goes through, actually, one step that I missed out here, and which you are probably very familiar with. You need to have, when you're creating your cluster, you need to ensure that validation does not have any errors. So me, like, I'm a cluster guy, so the first time I was deploying SQL Server, I hadn't validated my cluster, and it started complaining in this step. But I guess you guys know about that, so. I go ahead, and I initiate my SQL Server feature installation. I select what I want to install. Probably the management tools would be nice as well. So I name my SQL network VCO or the cluster network name. Sort of relevant to this, in Windows Server 2012 R2, we introduced another mode of creating a cluster called the AD-less or Active Directory Detached clusters. So we noticed that there's a lot of pain points involved with the Active Directory integration which clustering has, and it doesn't necessarily provide the value prop for a lot of SQL deployments. So that was the motivation between, so typically a cluster net name does two things. It gives you name resolution and it gives you authentication, so Kerberos authentication. So you can use both Windows authentication or you can use your SQL Server authentication. So if you choose to use SQL Server auth, that means you really don't need the Active Directory or the curb part of the cluster net name. So why should you take the tax of ensuring that your deployment has all the necessary Active Directory permissions? Perhaps you're in a locked environment and you do not need that tax. So that's the rationale behind this new mode of cluster deployment. So the way to deploy a cluster using that is it's not integrated yet into Failover Cluster Manager. But if you use the new cluster commandlet and you use the dash administrative access point DNS, we are going to create a cluster in the AD detached model. So we are going to register that name in DNS, but we aren't going to go ahead in AD and create a computer object for that. So you can go ahead and not worry about giving permissions in Active Directory for your SQL net name. So that's the one which you configured in this step. Out here, you can decide to choose the CSV disk, but we are anyway going to be overwriting it later in a subsequent step. So this kind of moot, probably want to select both IPv4 and IPv6, but by default, clustering, at least it's recommended for clustering to use IPv6, or at least not disable IPv6. I mean, many people ask us why, what if I run in an IPv4 only environment? That's fully supported by us. But the part of, at least the safest part in our internal deployments for most of the new features and most of the testing that we do, we use IPv6 and IPv4. So if you want to sort of deploy and run production in the safest part, it's safe to have IPv4 deployed. I mean, we do have IPv4 only runs, but they're a smaller fraction of our total test runs. So you probably want to run in the path of least resistance. So given my admin account. To be honest, I don't own this UI. This is the SQL Server team. So I need to tell them. I need to pass on your feedback to them. So this is where, if you are using an AD detached cluster, you'd probably want to select a mixed mode deployment, not the Windows authentication mode. And this here is where you're going to be specifying which cluster storage, cluster shared volumes you want to use. So perhaps for my database, I'd use this. But for my log files, I want to use a separate cluster shared volume. So this is where I'd sort of customize the CSVs that I want to use for my deployment. And that's pretty much the main step in sort of the main delta between your traditional deployments and your deployment with CSV. So this will install here, and then the next step I'd go into is I'd again go into my other cluster nodes, and I'd go ahead and add a node to my SQL failover cluster, and the steps are very similar. So I'm not going to walk through that here because it'll be kind of redundant, but I capture all of these in the blog post I pointed to in my so the link is here. So I have a screen capture of all the steps in case you need to refer to them. So I'm going to go to a cluster which I have already deployed on. So you'd have, this is what your mount points will kind of look like. I've renamed my CSV mount point here, and you have your SQL deployments, and you have your SQL Server role up here. But what I want to show is I want to fail over the SQL Server role to another node in the cluster, and I want to show what happens to your cluster storage. So traditionally, you'd have to fail over your physical disk resource corresponding to the LUN on which the SQL Server instance is stored on. But I want us to monitor what happens in this instance when you're stored on CSV. So here are my two cluster shared volumes, and I'm going to go ahead in node one and fail over my SQL Server instance. So I'd probably select node 2. Well, it did work when I did try it in before. Okay, so it says a cluster node is not available and node N2 is available. No, this is a different cluster. Maybe I could try doing it from here. And okay, but what should happen? Yeah, see, he's seen it and he believes me. But what should happen here is that I go out here and I fail over my SQL instance, and it would be pending, and during that time, my cluster shared volumes will be online. And so you'd see that this failover is pretty darn fast compared to what you would have if you were using traditional clustered storage. So I want to summarize, or at least if you leave this room with nothing else, I'd want you to leave with this one slide. So this is what, when you go back, this should be the value prop of why you should deploy SQL Server on CSV. So reason number one is scalability. You're able to consolidate multiple SQL instances without the need for any other complexity, without any other steps, you directly bypass the 24 SQL instances limitation on a cluster. Your manageability or your operability is simplified because your cluster shared volumes are available on any node in the cluster. So you can manage from any node, or you can RDP onto any node in your cluster, and you have lesser cluster shared volumes or lesser LUNs to manage. So if you're provisioning your LUNs, it no longer is a case where you have to over-provision several LUNs. It's just a single LUN or a smaller set of LUNs which you are able to consolidate your SQL instances. In case you have a polyserve deployment and you're concerned about the end of life, you have an alternative solution. Availability is critical for most of your production deployments. CSV definitely gives you a higher level of availability compared to your deployment using traditional cluster storages. If you have storage failures, we are going to route traffic or leverage a network and ensure that your SQL Server application is kept up. We have a faster failover because we no longer need to change the drive ownership during failovers. All nodes in the cluster have shared access to the storage. As a result, there's no need for dismounting or mounting the handles when you're failing over. You're able to leverage the new and improved check disk in Windows Server 2012, and CSV takes it a step further by ensuring that you have a zero downtime solution for running repair, or at least we automatically run repair for your disks. So you do not need to manually run it, neither do you need to have your SQL Server application unavailable when you're running repair. And the last consideration, you can potentially leverage the CSV block cache for unbuffered I/O for reads to your CSV database. And if you choose, or if you need additional security for your storage, potentially for deployments outside your secure data center, CSV is integrated with BitLocker and provides you an easy way of meeting your compliance requirements. So that pretty much sums it up as far as the value prop. So scalability, operability, availability, and potentially performance and security. I want to point out two sessions which would sort of complete the story or sort of enhance your rationale for moving to SQL Server 2014 and Windows Server 2012 R2. The first one, I hope you might have attended, but if you haven't, the video is online. The always on session in for Microsoft SQL Server 2014. My colleague from SQL Server walked through all the improvements and the value props of SQL Server 2014. The second session was yesterday, where my colleague walked through all the improvements in failover clustering in Windows Server 2012 R2. Specifically, there are at least a couple of features that are very relevant. I'd say three features that are very relevant for SQL Server. So there are quorum improvements, and we've made enhancements to dynamic quorum, which would be very relevant for your availability group deployments, where you're able to adjust your node weight between, you're essentially able to set the node weights for your DR site to zero and maintain so that your quorum is maintained by, or at least dictated by, your primary site. So dynamic quorum and quorum improvements. The second feature would be being able to leverage shared VHDX for your guest clustering deployments, or if you're deploying SQL Server in a guest cluster. Additionally, if you want more information on shared VHDX, we have sessions from last year's TechEd, as well as blogs from Jose, as to step-by-step instructions of how you can deploy shared VHDX. And once you have deployed shared VHDX, the steps to use shared VHDX for your SQL deployment is pretty much exactly what you've seen today. And the third feature we talked about is Active Directory detached clusters. So if you want to decouple, your nodes still have to be domain joined, but if you want to decouple your operation post cluster creation from Active Directory, that's a feature to look into. Some other resources. The failover clustering blog is written by the cluster PMs, and sometimes we have posts from developers. In particular, there's a post from our CSV dev diving deeper into, like I've sort of abstracted most of the CSV architecture, but he dives deeper into exactly what's happening in the different components and the filters in CSV. Then you have the failover cluster discussion forum. So we are monitoring that, and there are many other MVPs and field people who are monitoring this discussion forum. So if you have any cluster issues or concerns, you can feel free to post it out there. And I have, for the most part, about 90% of the questions tend to get answered there. Then there's also a blog from our field team. That's the Ask the Core Team blog, which is another resource that you have available. So that's about all I have for you today. I request you to fill out your evaluation because we are always trying to improve, trying to figure out better sessions for next Tech Ed. I'm trying to become a better speaker. So I appreciate the time you take to fill out your evaluation. And they also say you can win an Xbox One and you can get gift cards. So that might be a better reason to fill out your evaluation as well. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for waking up early in the morning and coming up here. And I wish you a safe trip back home. So if you have any further questions, I will be here. And I will also be in the booth right after, I guess, from 10:45 onwards. Thank you.